Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. We are talking barbecue this week here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, and that seems appropriate since Labor Day weekend is coming right up, one of the most popular backyard barbecue weekends of the entire year. And I know some of you are harboring the secret, or not so secret, desire to go pro, to pack up your backyard grill and join the barbecue circuit. Or maybe at least enter a contest and see how your ribs stack up. So this week we've got some advice for you, along with some inspiration on where backyard barbecue might take you. First, we'll talk with Indy resident Mark LaFay, who just won the Indiana State Fair Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off. He tells us how his passion for barbecue grew and how it led to becoming the Bacon Guy and launching his Old Major Market line of bacon and sausages, now available online and at local farmers markets. We'll also tap the Eat Drink Indie archives for more info on barbecue and revisit an interview from last year with Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue, who tells us what competition barbecue is all about. And we'll also talk with Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis, who tells us how he became obsessed with barbecue and how that led to launching a catering business. Plus, he gives us some tips on backyard barbecue as well. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, here we are at the end of August with a Labor Day weekend coming right up. And you know what that means? It means backyard barbecues. Labor Day is one of the biggest grilling days of the year, so we've got a little inspiration for you on just where barbecue might take you. Indianapolis resident Mark LaFay began barbecuing on the back patio, then progressed to smoking meats and eventually built his own barbecue rig, which took up a whole parking spot at his downtown condo. Now at home in Meridian Kessler with a growing family, his passion for cooking, gardening, hunting, barbecue, and smoked meats has grown as well into not just a lifestyle but a business. Mark now runs Old Major Market, an online source for bacon and sausages that you can also find at the Carmel Fishers and Broad Ripple Farmers Markets. But he still has the barbecue bug and recently won the 2017 Indiana State Fair Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off. Mark tells us about that competition and how he got started on the barbecue path that led to Old Major Market. So we're talking barbecue. So I'm just fascinated by the culture of barbecue and the sort of atmosphere around it. Tell me a little bit about what it's like.
Well, it's intense, that's for sure. I don't know that I'm super well versed in the culture, but the people that I know that do barbecue are pretty serious about it. It's serious gear, it's serious time commitment.
You have big stuff in your backyard, right?
Yes, yes, yeah, I do. Much to my wife's chagrin, I've got a big old grill, but yeah. Yeah, so.
So now, tell me what the competition at the State Fair was like for you, and what did you do, and how that went?
Sure. Well, it was our fourth year competing. That's the only real competition that I do.
So you're not traveling around in a big RV across the country?
Right, not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah,
right.
Not yet. No, that is not in the future. That's just a fun competition. It's put on by Shoops down in, I think they're in Franklin or something. And they're just a really cool group of people, really nice. And they just get a good bunch of competitors out that are generally pretty friendly. And,
right. Is it friendly, or do people chat and talk, or are they, a little bit more, guarded?
It's generally pretty friendly for sure. But there are some people that are, they take it so seriously that, they don't get too close.
Now, what's it like? You get there very early in the morning, don't you?
Yeah. So this year we got there. We pulled in at about 5 a.m. at the State Fair.
Oh, my goodness.
And we just parked right there on the main drag and set up.
What kind of a rig do you bring? What kind of gear? I mean, I've judged that competition before, and I've seen everything from just a Weber kettle grill like you'd have in your backyard to massive trailers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and yeah, that's exactly right. And there's a lot of custom grills. There's grills that are just huge and fabricated by, you know, large fabricators. And then there's people that bring their green egg. And
right.
You know, so it all depends. You know, I think some people just don't want to bring out all the big gear for, it's, you know, relatively, you know, small competition. But I've got one grill and one grill only. And
yeah.
So it just, we roll that thing in on the trailer and we park it and get to work. So
now, you know, we are looking at Labor Day weekend, right? Which is one of the big grilling weekends of the year.
Yep.
So how do you go from being a backyard barbecue person to getting to where you're competing?
Well, I think it's really just as easy as just signing up and
okay.
Yeah. So the first year that I was looking at doing this, I was, you know, I worked in technology.
So you have a tech background, a music background, not a barbecue background.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've eaten lots of barbecue around the country, but that's about it. Definitely has not been my my trade, so until recently. But I started off, when I started getting interested in slow cooking, it really was just that. I was like, oh, I'm going to make some ribs and start off just slow roasting in the oven and then finishing on the grill and doing all that kind of stuff. You know, just figuring it out. I lived in a condo downtown. Didn't really have a lot of room.
Oh, my goodness. So you were just, you know, had a grill, a backyard grill,
back,
right?
Yeah, a Weber, yeah, kettle grill in the back on a patio. And
okay.
So I would cook in the oven and then finish on the grill and do that. And so then that, it grew old quickly.
You must have had some success with that.
Sure. I mean, you know, I mean, I always ate it and people always right? said, oh, these are great, you know, but I think that a lot of that is just people are just like, oh, this is much better than I can make. I don't know.
You've cooked it for me and I like
good.
It, right?
Yeah, right. And so I bought a Master-Built electric smoker about the size of a dorm refrigerator. So I bought that and just I would leave that outside downstairs, you know, outside our condo. And so I'd run that overnight.
Smoking what?
Ribs, brisket, shoulder, chicken.
Okay.
All kinds of stuff, beans. And that's where the, you know, it really started to kind of get interesting for me. And so I consider myself an extreme hobbyer.
Okay.
That's a word.
tell me what that means.
Yeah. So I tend to find something I like and then I tend to take it to an extreme degree.
Oh, okay. So you really get into it. Right.
Yes. Yeah. So let's see. So we went from oven to electric smoker to me calling up my buddy Bill because he could weld and saying, hey, let's build a grill. And so we literally hauled diesel oil tanks out of my friend's basement, two of them. They still had diesel in them.
Well, and, you know, a lot of people still have those oil tanks in their basement.
Yes.
So you're repurposing one of those?
Yes. We started off with one. And then it took us about a summer to get it built, and I cooked on it, you know, through the fall. And then we decided to finish the other one out, and then we mounted them together and put them on a trailer, and there you go. So, you know, it went from I could do about 6 to 9 racks of ribs to I could do 90. And so
that was
about, yeah, so extreme, right? So, but that's
extreme.
Sort of the pattern in my life. So,
I'm assuming that by now when you're building that, you have a house. A place to put something like that. Oh, no, you were still in the condo.
I was still living in the condo,
my
yeah. And so we lived in a condo. I lived on in Fletcher Place long before it was cool and in an old historic building down there. And so once it was built, we, you know, the first grill, we threw it on the trailer and, you know, I just strapped it down because it wasn't welded to anything. It just was on legs. And
okay.
And I put a little wood box on the front of it to haul around my wood and all that kind of stuff. And I parked it in my parking spot. So it lived in my parking
your condo
spot.
Parking
uh-huh.
spot.
Yeah, so for years you could go to Google Earth and you could see my grill from space.
Okay, that's awesome.
So that was kind of cool. Yeah, and if they haven't updated the pictures recently, you may still see it there. But yeah, so I parked it there for, I want to say, 2 or 3 years. And then, let's see, my wife and I got married. We moved out of that condo about a year after that, and then we bought a house. And we were kind of in between places for about 4 or 5 months. So it lived in at a buddy's shop, and then it moved to our new house. And so it stayed in the garage. And then once we finally redid our fence, I built a little outdoor stall for it. So it still lives outside.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep. But so, it's got its little holding pen.
So this has become, you know, I mentioned barbecue culture. So this has kind of become a part of your life.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So the grill is the pet that we can never get rid of. You know what
okay,
I mean?
Right.
It's like you marry into a dog and you want to get rid of it.
But you can't.
Yeah. And I think my wife was just like, oh, Lord, how long are we going to drag this thing behind the family car?
We've been talking with Mark LaFay of Old Major Market in Indianapolis. Stay with us for more from Mark about launching his business and becoming the bacon guy here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. What does it take to turn a hobby into a business? For Mark LaFay of Indianapolis, it took a whole lot of bacon. Mark had been interested in barbecue, smoked meats, hunting, cooking, and backyard gardening for years, but in the past year and a half, he's turned those interests into a business. He started out making bacon on a backyard smoker for friends and neighbors and eventually became known as the Bacon Guy, with a growing email list of folks who wanted to order his bacon and sausages. That led to him launching Old Major Market, an online store, and to begin selling at local farmers markets. You can find him at the Carmel Fishers and Broad Ripple Markets and online as well. But I sat down with Mark this past week to talk about how Old Major Market got started.
Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of how this all started. You've kind of become the bacon guy.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in how you go from a tech background, a music background, and become something different.
Sure.
So tell me about how this all started.
Well, I mean, basically the transition was just in, you know, the winding down of a technology startup I had been working on. And, you know, I just was interested in kind of changing pace. And that's really, you know, that combined with all of our passions, I was like, well, it's not going to get any easier to do this when I get older. So, you know, if I'm going to try to do this, then let's try to do it now. And that's how, you know, we started down the path of, you know, of the market. But so the way that we actually got started on that, though, you know, once we said, okay, well, let's just see how this works. So how does it work? Because I don't know a lot.
Right.
When I got started, I didn't know a lot about food retail.
Okay.
You know, all the different things that go into that. You know, you're talking about perishable products. You're talking about, you know, health code. You're talking about, you know, just all kinds of regulation. And I mean, there's just a lot of pieces and parts that go into that.
I mean, were you making this for yourself and for friends before it became a market? Were you doing bacon in the backyard?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, the barbecue thing was basically the segue. So I started working with meat fabrication just because I'm a deer hunter and I do all the processing of any animals that we take and all that kind of stuff. You know, I definitely believe in maximum, you know, carcass utilization, you know, so.
So all this really does tie together,
really
doesn't
does.
It?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. So when I decided to start this, it wasn't like, all right, I'm going to go buy the charcuterie book and learn how to hot smoke bacon.
Right. So it started.
Right. But that was definitely a step in the process, you know. But
so you were interested in all of this, you know, you mentioned the backyard gardening, the hunting, the slow food, the yep, cooking at home. It all kind of has come together.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so when we started to, you know, say, how do we start this process? I said, well, you know, why don't I just pick a product that everybody loves, and let's just do it as best as we can. And let's see if our neighbors like it.
Okay.
And it literally was as simple as that. And so I was like, well, everybody loves bacon.
Yes, everybody, right?
I think the human test is, do you like bacon? Yes. Okay, you pass. So, yeah, we started with that. And
so you just started making bacon.
Yeah. I mean, I sent out a text message to about 15 neighbors and said, hey, I'm making some bacon. Would you like some? This is how much I'll sell it to you for. And so they're like, yeah, sure. And so,
so you know, got a good response right off?
Right off the bat, everybody was like, this is the best bacon I've ever had.
Okay, well, now that's the response you want.
That's the response you want. But, you know, if they've just been eating Hormel bacon their whole life, then, you know, the bar is set very low.
Okay, well, that's not a bad thing.
You're right. You know? So we're not Hormel. Maybe we're something else. I don't know.
So you got to hit right off.
Yeah. And so so I said, okay, well, then if I can do this once, can I do it twice? And
consistency, right?
Well, it's consistency, but also just, you know, if they really do like it, will they buy it again? You know,
Is
this just, this is nice.
Oh,
Mark's
I'm being
doing
nice
this.
To my neighbor. Yeah, yeah. I'll buy some bacon. Sure,
yeah,
sure,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, sure, sure, sure. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Girl Scout cookies, you know?
That's right.
Okay, yeah, I guess. I don't need them, but I'll take them.
But it wasn't like that, right?
Right. So it kind of started to grow. So then, you know, there are some other people who are like, hey, I heard you're making really good bacon. Can I get on your list? And I was like, well, I don't really have a list. On the inside, I said, I don't really have a list, but on the outside, I'm like, yeah, you can get on my list, I guess. And so there was, you know, that's kind of how it started to go. And then, you know, I decided to cast a little bit wider net. Before I got too, you know, crazy about it, though, I was just like, I need to figure out how to do this legit.
Sure.
You know, so that's when I started, you know, basically figuring out, how do I get into a commercial kitchen?
Right.
How do I do this? And the health department not find me, you know, how do I do this, you know, and just be legit. So then, I talked to the health department and
of course.
Started going through all of that stuff and, you know, went and got my serve safe manager, you know, got the book, took
so you
the text
so,
the next day, you know,
so you
that
became
kind of stuff.
Legitimate, right?
I became legitimate. Yeah. And so, you know, it was kind of interesting to have to do that so quickly, so early on, but you know, it was fine. And then it was just, you know, learning, you know, all the different nuances of the business as I went. So and things started to expand very quickly because, you know, we have a really unique neighborhood in that it's very tight knit. And so one person says, your bacon's amazing. And two other people say, I want your bacon. And so that's kind of how it went. And so then I started figuring out, all right, what are some other products that we could produce? And, you know, what are some things that, you know, maybe, you know, we could do better than the status quo, you know? And so then that's when I started introducing sausages and different flavors of bacon. And then, you know, it's just sort of has evolved from there. So
that's Old Major Market, right? So that's the concept. You're creating this and selling it online right now.
Correct.
What are the products that you have?
Well, I think we've got about 40 different products now, maybe 50.
That's a lot.
It is.
That's grown considerably.
It's too much.
In a year and a half,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. We sell at the farmers markets, too. And so, yeah, so one of the things that, you know, I've been figuring out is forecasting sales and demand, managing production, you know, because unfortunately I can't snap my finger and make raw materials appear.
And, you figure that out.
Yeah,
yeah. That'll be great.
That'll be a new business. So there's been a lot of that. And then also trying to figure out just – again, that with the seasonality of things, you know, there's certain products that, you know, I think go better in different parts of the year.
Is there a seasonality for bacon? Is there a bacon season?
There's, it's 364 days out of the year.
There you go.
One day so that you don't have to tell your doctor that you eat it every day of the year.
So do you see continued success for Old Major Market?
Well, yes, I guess, you know,
it seems like
knock
it.
On wood. I mean, we're going to keep going, right, until there's a reason why we don't. But, I think that, you know, there is going to be a logical next step, you know, coming, you know, because you can only, there's only so many farmers markets and there's only so much affordable labor and there's only so much, you know, time that you can commit to something. And it's intense. I mean, a farmers market is. You know, it is a hard thing to do because, you know, for me, it's like on a Monday, I'll smoke bacon. On a Tuesday, I'll slice and package bacon. On a Wednesday, I'm seasoning and grinding, whether it's pork, chicken, duck, or turkey, depending on the sausages or all of the above. On Thursday, I'm linking and, you know, stuffing and linking. And Thursday afternoon or Friday morning, I'm packaging. And then I'm also getting the dries. I'm loading the coolers. I'm assembling all my gear. If I haven't washed any dishes, I'm washing dishes.
So this is a very glamorous undertaking.
It is a grind. I mean, it's funny. I've actually lost 20 pounds since I started the farmer's markets this year because number one, I'm getting my steps in, baby. You know, I'm on my feet every single day, you know, and then, well, you know, I'm not sitting down. So on my fitness pal, I can now say that, no, I'm actually, I live an active lifestyle.
Well, now tell me how people can try your products, because they're out there for them, right?
Yeah. So, if you come see me at the farmer's market, I mean, we sample our products at all the markets, and then you can purchase. We do monthly sales. You can get on our email list, and we send out an email to notify you when sales are open for the following month. Typically, when that email goes out, it's about a 2-week lead time from pickup. And we'll deliver if you're in the right zip code. There's a delivery charge that's pretty small, unless you order over a certain dollar amount, and then it's free. Otherwise, you can pick us up at one of three times at two different locations.
And people can find out all that information at where?
OldMajorMarket.com.
We've been talking with Mark LaFay of Old Major Market. You can find out more about his bacon and sausages at oldmajormarket.com or look for Old Major Market on Facebook. Talking barbecue today here on Eat Drink Indie Radio. So we're reaching into the archives and revisiting an interview with barbecue champ Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue. Jeff has been at it for years, since 1999, and of course his barbecue passion turned into Squealer's restaurants in Indianapolis and Mooresville. Jeff tells us what competitive barbecue is all about, why he likes it, and how it becomes a lifestyle.
There's a lot of things that go into it. So not only is the people that you meet on the road and having fun with them and learning things from them, but it's also, if you have a competitive nature, obviously it's going to be a good sport for you to go into. Judges have a very big control. Everybody's opinion's different. Flavor profiles are different. For me, competition barbecue is trying to pick the best quality meats that we can, getting a dry rub and a sauce and your flavor layers just right to hit all elements that you're trying to hit, be it like for us, you know, usually we like to start with a little bit of sweet in the front side of it, and in the back side, as you're swallowing, basically you're going to get a little heat. Not a lot of heat, but for us, it's not all just about sweetness. So we want multiple flavor layers in our competition.
Now, how do you figure all that out? Kind of tell me the backstory about how you got into this and how it progressed to where you are now.
Well, I got into it a little over 20 years ago, and my dad got me into it, and Ron Yater, and we just did it for fun. It was classic, a hobby, right? And we did
just start out from a backyard thing?
Yeah, from a backyard thing, basically. Did a lot of cooking at home, this and kind of things. And first comp test was at Deer Creek way back when in the early 90s. And it was just a rib contest. So we cooked ribs and we kind of got the bug there. Can't really recall. I think we got second or third at that contest out of 9 teams. So it wasn't.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, for your first one, we were proud. And then that year also the World Pork Expo was in town. So we did that down at the fairgrounds. And there was, I don't know, around 60 teams there that year probably. And we ended up taking like 9th in ribs. And that's the only thing we cooked out of the four categories because we only had a little tiny cooker.
But, well, now that's the thing. Sometimes at the contest, you know, you see great big rigs and everything. But then sometimes you see just little grills and cookers and things like that. So you started out small then.
Yeah, real small. I mean, went from that. That was just a dome type cooker that we were cooking on then. We got a little larger. When was it? 99, I think. My dad ended up winning the World Pork Expo, so that's where we ended up. He started with a bigger rig then because they gave one away. So now he had one on wheels, which back then most of your competition teams didn't have large setups. They didn't have RVs. They didn't have toy haulers. They had 10x10 tents and cots and small cookers, you know. The profiles changed so much over the years. It started, you could have a decent dry rub, a decent sauce, and you should do decently at the contest. You know, where it's evolved to now is I would say the RVs and pull behinds are more prevalent than your 10x10 tents nowadays. There's not many people just dry rubbing. There's a lot of injecting going on. There's a lot of different layer profiles that you're doing on your meats. you know, you really only have about a 24-hour window to do anything with anyway. So it's evolved to be, I kind of relate it to where NASCAR was years ago and to where it is now. And I know it's nearly not that large, but, I mean, you have contests out there paying $50,000. You have contests out there paying $20,000. I mean, so there's some large contests out there that pay big money. And when you start getting into big money, you get into people have their very closed mouth about what they do. It's kind of like your playlist. You know, you're not going to tell people your playlist. We do have a group of friends that we're all pretty tight. They all do pretty well. We'll bounce a little bit of recipes off each other. But no one gives the 100% out there, I can tell you that. So it
has become a very big deal. You know, with, like you said, with the big RVs, the big rigs, the secrecy on the ingredients.
Right.
So when did that happen?
I think it's evolved over the years. You start seeing a lot more larger trailers. When I got involved in about 1999, I built my first trailer. But I was doing a rib fest circuit, so I needed something large. It's more like a kitchen. So I put a big smoker in that. I had a sink system. I had refrigeration in it. So that was about the start of where people started building bigger things to do competitions on. And through the last 15 years, you've just seen it grow more and more and more, and people getting bigger and bigger. And you know, it's not necessarily it makes you cook better, but it makes it more comfortable to be there for 3 days while you're doing it. So
some of them are multi-day events, and you are there. I mean, you're tending to whatever you have on the cookers. You know, you're sleeping there. You know, you're there all day. What's one of those events like?
Well, we usually roll in on a Thursday, depending on where we're pulling to. It's usually on a Thursday afternoon. On Friday morning, you can get your meat inspected at most of the contests. And you have to have that meat inspected in order to use it. It can't come in pre-marinated, pre-rubbed. It has to be...
It's just a plain piece of meat.
Right, raw product. So, and you know, we have chicken, pork shoulders, ribs, and beef brisket are usually the main four categories. So we usually pull in on Thursday afternoon. We get set up. We get the trailer ready, get organized. Friday morning, we're usually hitting... as soon as we get our meat inspected, we're working on trimming it and injecting it. And you can trim your meat before you get to a contest, but we're usually not that organized to get that done before we go. So we're usually doing that on Friday morning. That's about a four-hour process to get everything done. Once we have it trimmed, then we start our injection processes. We start our rub processes. And then after all that's done, Friday is more of a social day. You kind of watch people roll in, talk to people you haven't seen in a long time, kind of figure out if you're changing stuff up on your game plan, you know, rubs, sauces, you kind of work with those a little bit. Sometimes on Friday we might do a sample cook of some chicken or something along those lines. But our competition usually starts with the meat thrown on about 10 o'clock at night on Friday night.
Oh, so. My goodness. So that for a Saturday event... Right.
Yeah, we're a low and slow cook. There's teams out there that cook hot and fast, it's called, which they're cooking at a higher temperature, obviously, and it's a shorter process. For us, we're still about a 225 to 250 degree cooker. We run those. Our pork butts will go on at, like I said, around 10 o'clock at night, and those aren't actually turned in until usually around noon the next day, 12:30 the next day. So we run with those. The next piece of meat that we'll throw on is our brisket, and that usually hits about 2 o'clock in the morning.
So you are up all night tending to this.
Yeah, and we have a crew of three. We have Brent Coons, Jim Coldren, and myself, Jeff Yater. And, you know, that's our team that we run with on a normal – we all have our roles, let's say. You know, Coonsy, as we call him, he's usually our middle-of-the-night guy. He likes to – I necessarily doesn't maybe not like it, but he's usually the one that's getting up and stirring the fire up a little bit in the middle of the night. But, yeah, it's an all-night process for us. I mean, we start and – and one of the cookers that we deal with, it's not like a pellet cooker or anything like that. So it's something that you have to tend to, and you have to make sure your temperatures aren't spiking or dropping or whatever. It's an all-night event for us. And hopefully the next day everything's coming off right when you want it. We're not much of resters. There's a lot of teams out there. What they'll do is, like on their bigger pieces of meat, they'll pull them and rest them for a couple hours before they actually turned in. We don't really do that too much. It's just something that... being that I've done this so long, you just kind of get in the old school ways of doing things and how things have evolved with like hot and fast cookers and things like that. It's just hard for me to wrap my mind around doing that just because everything I've been taught for so many years is so low and slow.
You mentioned, you know, you're watching the people come in then, you know, the night before. It seems like it's a real community, right?
Oh, yeah. I've met, I don't know how many friends through the barbecue world. I mean, not only are we local and we do local barbecue with the restaurants, but over the years of knowing people and seeing how many people have taken a hobby such as myself to a business level. You know, I mean, I know guys that, one guy, Ray Lampe, which is, he's the big green egg rep. First time we met Ray was in Michigan. He was sitting Indian style cooking on a hibachi. So, you know, he's come a long way from then. And, you know, Byron, Bad Byron, which owns Butt Rub, you know, that's, he started when I started back way back when, and now he has, you know, a seasoning and spice company, you know. So there's a lot of people that have taken this competition barbecue to the next level.
We've been talking with Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue in Indianapolis and Mooresville. For more information on the restaurants and the competition circuit, check out squealersbarbecue.com. I'm Jolene Katzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indy Radio talking barbecue. One thing seems to lead to another in the world of barbecue, and once you get into it, you just keep going down the barbecue road. That's what happened to Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis, who recently competed at Riberfest in Madison, Indiana. You can try Black Metal Barbecue at the upcoming Meadful Things and Outsiders Festival, September 2nd in Indianapolis, and at the September 9th Canvitational Beer Fest. For this interview, we hit up the Eat, Drink, Indy archives and revisit an interview with Chris, who tells us how he became obsessed and possessed with barbecue.
Black Metal Barbecue basically started when I became obsessed with barbecue. I say I'm obsessed and possessed because of the black metal thing. I started probably barbecuing back, you know, early 2000s in my backyard when we got our new house, and trying to replicate, you know, some of the ribs I had at restaurants or things like that, you know, failing sometimes, you know, nailing it a little bit, I guess. And then I kept doing it, practicing, and we'd have people over for cookouts, and next thing I know, I didn't even get to taste my ribs. They were all gone.
Oh, my goodness. So you were recreating those tastes that you were going for, maybe, right?
I don't know if I was recreating those tastes. I was making some sort of tastes that were edible, I guess. I don't know. Maybe everybody was just hungry. But, I did that for a while in the backyard, just grilling, like, on a gas grill, trying to make it work with, like, wood chips on the side, like I read on the internet.
Oh, man, but gas grill, that's tough, right?
It's not the preferred method to do traditional barbecue, I suppose. But, I kept doing that, and then eventually I got my own backyard pit, which was a Weber Smoky Mountain, one of the smaller ones. And, you know, became obsessed with the barbecue books, the barbecue TV shows, things like that.
So you were watching it and trying to do those kinds of things in your backyard?
Absolutely. I would watch the first season of Barbecue Pit Masters, which is they're following a few competition teams around the circuit, you know, the KCBS competition circuit. And I would try to steal their, like, tips and tricks that they might be showing. You know, they don't really show how the teams are cooking their food. But if you pay attention, you know, like, what's on their table, you know, what sauce is that they're using, what temperature are they doing? So I would try to follow those things. And then I joined the barbecuebrethren.com forum online, which, if anybody's looking for barbecue information, that's the site to go to. It's fantastic. And I would read that forum every day, use the search function, and just find answers to anything I needed to try to make my food better. So
So you were kind of obsessed.
I was, and it's only grown from there. I am absolutely obsessed with barbecue.
Well, I think that's something that happens when people get into barbecue. It kind of starts to pervade your life. It becomes maybe a lifestyle.
Absolutely. You know, and that obsession led me to do my first barbecue competition.
Now, when was that? Tell me about that.
Okay, so yeah, that was in 2014, I believe. We did the Franklin Smoke on the Square barbecue competition. We signed up not really knowing what to expect. I mean, I read the rule book. You know, I became a member of the Kansas City Barbecue Society so I could have my number and everything. You know, and we roll up in my truck. The truck bed is just full of crap. It's just it's full of stuff. Like we didn't really know what we needed to bring. We had my Weber smoker, we had a beat up charcoal grill, and we had my ugly drum smoker that I made out of a 55 gallon drum that was used for honey before that. And it was just homemade, really ugly. It had grass like all over the side of it because I had just mowed my lawn and the grass blew onto the side of it. So what
was that like coming up with your you know kind of backyard stuff with the professional barbecue rig people?
It was extremely intimidating at first because, you know, we rolled up and everybody's in like RVs or they have these big trailers, you know, with their huge smokers on the back of them. And we're like, oh, what are we getting ourselves into? You know, our goal was not come in last place. That was the absolute end goal. But then people started coming up and talking to us. You know, some people walk by and kind of give an eye to our like little smokers and like whatever. But then some people come up and talk to us and be like, "You're new, aren't you?" And we're like,
"Oh, does it show?" Right?
Yeah, exactly. But everybody was so nice, and we just hung out with everybody all night. You know, all day that Friday, all night that Friday. People giving us advice and everything.
It is a nice, a familial or kind of group. You know, this whole barbecue culture.
Absolutely, it's. You know, I grew up playing in bands in like the metal music scene, you know, and it's very similar to that. The culture, the community around, you know, music, whatever scene that may or may not be, I'm sure it's the same, but it's very tight. And everybody was just so friendly, shared love, shared interests. And I just fell in love with it even more after that first competition. So.
Oh, so now did you know then that there were going to be more of this, more in your future?
Well, we somehow came in fifth place at that competition, and that after that we were absolutely hooked for the competition stuff. So yeah, I knew it was on at that point. Like we couldn't stop.
So how do you go from backyard barbecuing, which a lot of people are familiar with, a lot of smokers, you know, people, you know, have you know, put together things in their backyard. How do you go from that and make the jump to a little bit more serious stuff?
Well, for me, I felt no other choice. I mean, I had to. I was at the competition. I got bit by the bug, you know, and once you enter like a professional competition, you know, I mean, you're considered a pro and you're not allowed to go back to the backyard division, I guess.
See, that is all right, because there is a backyard division for the people who are just getting started, right?
Yeah. And I didn't know about that really when I started.
So you jumped right in.
Jumped right in. So we did more of those, you know, and then people started just liking the food a whole lot. You know, people would come to the competitions and eat all our leftovers. And then I decided to start a small little business. So I started Black Metal Barbecue and like doing small catering gigs and little pop-up things at breweries and bars, selling stuff like that. And the response was outstanding. So that just grew and grew until like what our plans are right now. So
now tell me a little bit about the name and what your plans are for the business now, right?
Yeah, okay. Black Metal Barbecue, the name comes from basically my love for metal music. And, you know, like I grew up playing metal and punk rock and hardcore and stuff like that. And then it's kind of the antithesis of, you know, the barbecue kitchen, like the funny little pigs, you know, with like their little outfits and like the corny names, which is awesome. Yeah. Like you go to barbecue competitions and everybody has like these names that are full of puns and it's hilarious. But I kind of wanted to be a little bit different, but we don't take ourselves seriously. I mean, if you look at our logo, it's cheesy in its own way, which we did that on purpose. But it just shows who we are. You know, we're not country boys or anything like that. We were from the city. We like metal music, you know.
Well, now that is a differentiating point, you know, because, you know, a lot of the barbecue teams do have that sort of country boy kind of look about them.
Absolutely, they do. You know, which is awesome. That we got to be who we are. That's not us. You know, so we're.
So you're from the city, right?
Yep, born and raised. So yeah, that's where the Black Metal Barbecue comes from. And you know, right now we have an Indiegogo campaign going. We're taking the business to the next level.
Tell me about that. Tell me how you decided to pursue that kind of funding.
Okay. Well, we raised. I saved up and I got some family help. And scraped together every penny from all the pop-up gigs, catering gigs we did, and we were able to purchase a trailer.
How big? What kind?
It is a Southern Dimensions Group trailer from Waycross, Georgia. It is 8.5 feet wide by 20 feet long with a 8-foot barbecue porch on the back where my Shirley Fabrications custom-built smoker will go. See, that's another thing. I already got the smoker that I went down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama to get a couple years ago. So, and that's going to go on the back of this trailer.
20 feet long?
20 feet long. Yeah, and that's actually small compared to a lot of the trailers at these competitions and in the, that the big-time barbecue caterers use. So we're going to be tight for space in the kitchen a little bit, but we also live in the city, and it's going to be hard to park that guy. So, but yeah, so we had most of the funding ready for that. You know, we bought the big parts. We have the smoker. We have the trailer. You know, and so we decided, you know, to start a little crowdfund campaign and give back to some people. We have some awesome perks, you know, parties that are cheap, you know, 15 people for $300. I mean, it's not a bad deal. Plus, you get to give to a good business. So we're doing that to be able to outfit the trailer with a few things that we still need and to pay for our insurance and things like that to get us rolling without debt. Because so far we've been able to do this without going into debt, which is great for us because it makes it a pretty low risk, you know, proposition. So that's where we are now.
We've been talking with Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis. We'll be right back with more from Chris here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Labor Day weekend is coming right up, and with Labor Day being one of the biggest grilling days of the year, we know you'll be out there in the backyard soon, cooking up something for your holiday get-together. And since we've been talking barbecue today here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, we opened up the archives to an interview where we asked Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis for a little advice, which seems to come down to practice, read, watch, taste, and practice some more. We talked with Chris about smoke, meat, sauces, rubs, and of course, ribs.
The catering part's actually my favorite part of it. We love to take our barbecue to, you know, events and to parties and have people come around the pit, hang out with us, you know, if we do the on-site catering. It's super fun. Everybody comes around and just wants to know about what we're doing, wants to know about the pit, wants to know about what wood we're using, wants to know how long we cook our brisket. They want to know all that stuff, which is perfectly fine because I want to teach people, you know, I want people to, you know, love barbecue as much as I do, you know, and the catering is also, we're going to be licensed as a food truck, but the catering hopefully will get us through the colder months and we'll add to, you know, the end profit and all that, so.
So it's a very sociable scene, barbecue is, don't you think?
Absolutely, and that's one of my favorite things about it, the community aspect, and that's something that I hope to help bring to Indy. I mean, there's some great barbecue restaurants, there's great barbecue people around Indianapolis, but I want to help tie it all together somehow, and I want Black Metal Barbecue to be known as like a place where people want to go spend their Saturday afternoon, hang out around the trailer, or eventually, you know, a small restaurant barbecue shack, you know, drinking beers, hanging out, you know, playing games, whatever, just grabbing a tray of food with a bunch of friends and hanging out. So, you know.
So do you see a lot of interest clearly in barbecue? So this doesn't seem like it's too far-fetched. You know, this kind of scenario could happen.
I hope so. But from the response we've had before at our events, you know, the vibe that I want has been there. So I see no reason why we can't, you know, make this happen and bring awesome barbecue to Indy, you know, in addition to what's already here, and bring our, you know, heavy metal party attitude to the scene as well. You know, I really think it can happen. You know, people want it. The response is there. People love barbecue. People love to have fun. That's all we want to do is have fun and serve people awesome barbecue.
So now, if you could offer some advice, because this, you kind of living the dream for some people. You know, a lot of people probably are out there in their backyards thinking, man, I would love to do this for real. Any advice for people who might be considering that?
Yeah, practice your butt off. Read every book from the barbecue pit masters out there. You know, there's a ton of great barbecue books. There's a ton of great barbecue videos on YouTube. There's a ton of barbecue shows. Not all of them great or not, but there's, you can learn something from them. But mostly you have to practice, and you have to eat good barbecue, find what you like, and try to learn how to replicate that. You have to become a master of whatever pit you're using. You have to make sure that your fire is burning clean. You have to know when the meat is done. It's maybe not done when you think it's done. And things like that. So
what are some of those things that you might point out to people? You know, like the smoke, the temperature, that kind of thing.
Well, the smoke, for the biggest thing that I've learned is that you need a clean fire. If you have dirty smoke, your barbecue is going to taste bitter. It's just going to be bad.
So what do you mean by dirty smoke?
Dirty smoke means that your fire is not getting enough oxygen. It's basically a smoldering fire that's not clean. You need a lot of oxygen to burn a clean fire. And you know you're doing that when you don't have smoke billowing out of it. You want the smokestack to run what they call a thin blue smoke. It's basically, you can barely see it. If you're looking through the smokestack, I mean, you can just see very faint white smoke, you know, coming out. If you see clouds of it coming out, or it's not moving, it's puffing out like a train or something, that's bad. That's not the smoke that you want at all. So,
what about advice on the actual cooking? Are there certain things that are more popular or that might be a good place to start?
As far as cuts of meat? I wouldn't start with a brisket. Brisket's a little challenging to find that sweet spot. So many people say it's the hardest cut of meat to cook, but once you figure it out, it's not hard. Right? You just gotta figure out the tenderness point that you're looking for. But I would start out with pork butts. Pork butts are basically, in my opinion, the easiest thing to cook. You can basically throw them on a smoker, and as long as you're maintaining a clean fire, maintaining a constant temperature, and temperature is pretty irrelevant. You can cook low and slow. You can cook hot and fast. It all comes out fine as long as you pay attention to what you're doing. Throw a pork butt on there, season it up with your favorite rubs, and just cook it until it's tender, you know, regardless of what the internal temperature might be. And then you got to let it rest. Don't forget to let it rest. If you pull it off and then just pull it automatically and start pulling it, shredding it up, it's going to be dry in a minute. So, wrap it up in some towels, throw it in a cooler, let it rest for a few hours. You'll be fine.
Do you have a preference between, ribs, brisket, chicken, because, pork, those course, any kind of preferences that you have that it's kind of become a favorite?
I don't eat a ton of barbecue in general because I cook it all the time and I'm always tasting it, but I will tell you I will eat brisket all day long every day. I love brisket. It is my favorite. It's one of my top favorite foods. I won't say well done because some people might misconstrue that. A well-cooked brisket is basically heaven. It is the best thing that I can imagine. Sometimes my partner Jamie Vernon, he does the competitions with me and everything. We'll be sitting there at a competition. We'll slice up our brisket and we will, take a little test sample of it, and we'll just look at each other, and just die just because it's so good. We can't imagine eating anything better, even if we fail miserably, at that competition. That bite right there was worth it. So,
what about the flavor profile? I hear a lot about the Midwest having a sweet palate in all sorts of kind of foods. Does that translate to barbecue as well?
Yeah, it does. If you compare Midwestern barbecue, because I would say, Indiana, it's kind of the Kansas City style, the sweet, molasses-y sauce, something like that. If you compare that to Texas barbecue, where it's all just salt and heavy pepper, it's totally different. As far as my preference, I like a mix between, honestly, and that's kind of what we're trying to do. It's not sickly sweet barbecue by any means. It's probably a little more spicy than a lot of places around here, but the Midwest definitely has a preference for the sweet and the sticky barbecue. And, that's not – we always serve our sauce on the side. We rarely ever serve anything sauced unless we get a request for that.
Okay, I have to ask, though, what about ribs? People always seem to want to do ribs. Any advice on that, for people that are eyeing that backyard grill and can't wait to get back outside?
Oh, sure, ribs. So, you've got your baby back ribs, and then you have your full-on spare ribs, and then you have your St. Louis cut ribs. So I recommend you can either buy a rack of spare ribs for yourself, and then you can cook them like that. But it's easier if you trim them down to St. Louis style, which means cutting off the breastbone if it's there and cutting off the cartilage tips. Then you can make rib tips out of those, just a little chef snack. So, ribs are fairly easy. Just take them, remove the membrane on the back. Some places don't do it, but I think you should. It turns into a weird papery consistency. So peel off the membrane. There's videos on how to do it. Sometimes it can be tough until you get the hang of it. And then, season up both sides with your favorite barbecue rub, rubs, whatever you want. It's kind of irrelevant, for a backyard cook, just whatever you like. Throw it on your pit. Whatever that might be, at whatever temperature. My favorite temperature would probably be 275 to 300 degrees. A lot of people go way lower than that, but I feel that 275 renders out the fat of spare ribs and St. Louis ribs a little bit better. So, throw them on for two and a half hours until they get a color that you like. You want a deep red mahogany color at that point. And then what I do at that temperature is kind of a take on the what they call the 3-2-1 method. And that's more for cooking at 225. You do 3 hours out in the smoke, you do 2 hours wrapped up in foil, and then 1 hour back in back on the pit. If you do that at 275, you're going to come up with mush. But put it out in the smoke for a couple hours till it looks good. Then take some heavy duty foil, put your rack of ribs in there, and add some sort of seasoning ingredients. You know, some people put in apple juice, some people put in hot sauce, brown sugar. Some people put butter in there, things like that. Whatever you want. It's open. And then you just wrap them up really tight, throw them back on the pit for an hour or so, wrapped up really tight. And keep the temperature going. You know, at this point, you don't have to add any more smoke to it because it's in foil. It's not getting smoke. And so probably, in an hour, hour and a half, something like that, if it's a meaty rack of ribs. If you're cooking a small rack of ribs, you don't want to go that long. But then take them out of the foil, check their tenderness. You'll know they're tender if you pick them up halfway with a pair of tongs in the middle and they basically bend almost a 90 degree, not quite. Or you can take your fingers and twist some of the bones, and if they start twisting, breaking away from the meat, you're probably pretty close. Or you can take a toothpick and go between the bones and the meat, and if it slides in and out like a knife through warm butter, then they're about there. So at this point, if you want to sauce them, go ahead and throw a light coat of sauce on there, throw them back on the pit and sauce them, and let the sauce set for a little while. Or throw them back on there until they get tender and let the bark firm up a little bit, and as soon as they're tender, like I mentioned, pull them off, let them sit for 20 minutes, slice them up.
We've been talking with Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis. For more information, including upcoming events, go to blackmetalbbqindy.com or look for Black Metal Barbecue on Facebook. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, and Do Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for tuning into our barbecue show today, and thanks also to our guests, Mark LaFay of Old Major Market in Indianapolis, Jeff Yater of Squealer's Barbecue, and Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, and Do Radio.